Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. I'm okay. It's been a bit sort of, well, strange. The weather is the only way I can describe it.
Oh, do you know, my suntan's just going. It's falling off.
You have a tan.
Well, I did. So, probably a couple of months ago when we had very hot weather.
Yeah,
so,
I remember those days. It was in June. I was on holiday at the time.
There you go.
Yeah.
But I believe the summer's more like we used to have. Well, you might. I'm younger than you, but we used to have.
Don't remind me. Come on.
As children.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange thing, isn't it, really? Apart from the summer of 76, which was extraordinarily hot, and I think most people who are old enough will remember that. Yeah. Summers used to be a hodgepodge of some really good, hot, nice, warm days and some rather wet days. It's the wind that's been the odd thing this year, but there's been quite a bit of rain around, which has been, makes taking your dog for a walk a little bit tricky.
Well, it does, because obviously they're going to get wet. Wet rain is good on a dog's coat.
It's like they don't care, do they?
They don't care. Some dogs don't like the idea of going out in the rain, as in they won't necessarily go in the garden for wees and poos if it's raining. Some of the tight-skinned dogs, where they feel the rain on their body. Quite a few terriers, you know, just generally speaking, they don't always like it. But if you pick the lead up, because the lead means something else, it means we're going to go out and have fun, they're happy. So if you are struggling with getting your dog out for wees and poos on a wet day, just pick a lead up and put the lead on the dog and then put your own coat on and just go around the garden. But then you can let the lead off the dog sort of halfway around the garden. You can run in and get dry and leave the dog out there.
I mean, how necessary are these dog coats that you can get?
But again, it depends, because you don't want to overheat your dog. A lot of the dog coats are quite padded. There are some sort of anoraki, mackie things out there. And I think it really depends on... We were away, like yourselves, we were away the 3 weeks ago, I suppose it is, 4 weeks ago. And we were in a town, and we took the dogs in, and you end up, funnily enough, going into a dog shop, because there's nothing else to do.
As you do.
Loads of things to do, but we ended up in the local dog shop. And there was an array of coats and jackets and all sorts of things for dogs. But there were a couple of sort of like pack-a-max, like we have when we go out. And you think, well, they're frightfully expensive. But you think about it logically and think, well, okay, well, if you are in a town and you are on holiday and you've got a fluffy dog or a dog that sort of soaks up water quite considerably, perhaps it is a good idea to have something that you can stop it getting too drenched.
I mean, say from a dog's point of view, most of the time they don't care. They'll just stand there at the end of it all and have a good shake and get you soaking wet. And they'll look at you and say, well, I'm okay now, I'm fine. But the problem, the difficulty comes in with all of that rain and stuff. A lot of people take their dogs off-road, you know, on footpaths and all the rest of it. And, of course, puddles that are around on those sorts of pathways are not exactly sort of clean water, are they? They're more, muddy, I think, is probably the way of it. And dogs actually like that, don't they?
Yeah, they love a muddy puddle. And again, you know, when we've had hot weather, if there's any water around, they're in it. If they're a dog that, again, likes water, we've got an array of dogs, some of them that like the water, and one the other day just went up to his armpits, and then his friend, who's the same breed type, just looked at him and said, I'm not going in there. So whereas our chum's dog was sort of swimming because she was a different breed altogether. So it just depends on the dog. But, yeah, they're muddy. When they've had rain, they're safer. If there's been no rain about, just be aware of what sort of puddles or ponds you are allowing your dog to swim in. We had a situation a few years ago. We have our friends' Labradors, and they were staying for their summer break, and we found a lovely area to walk, which was shady and nice, big, open ponds, clean ponds. However, there was clearly some hidden objects in the water, and one of the dogs came out, and she'd taken a load of her fur off one of her legs. Dear. I know, fortunately, she didn't injure the leg or do anything. But you think, well, here we go again. You know, I'm not saying that there were shopping trolleys in the water, but that sort of thing where people, yeah, scurrilous people have thrown things in. So, you know, it is that old thing that you see a lovely pond or a lake and you think you want your dog to jump in it, but, you know, what's in there?
Yeah, well, the other thing, of course, is a lot of these dogs actually are really not too fussed about what they drink either, are they?
No. Again, you know, some dogs are a bit more circumspect, but others aren't, and they will drink. And if they're hot, they'll drink and drink, and dogs don't realise that drinking doesn't cool them down. They shouldn't generally get hot to start with, which I know is weird because they do get hot, but they shouldn't get overly heated because they would naturally not let themselves get like that. So to drink is not necessarily that appropriate to get them cool by keeping their legs cool and so on. But yes, if they do drink, and then they can get an upset tummy because there's bacteria. I would always recommend take your own water and teach your dog to drink that. But that in itself,
how are you
going
to do that? Is that in one of those little collapsible bowls, or are you talking about one of those drinking bottles with a special spout on it?
Well, I'm not talking about any of those because I'm a lazy old sausage, and I try and teach my dogs just to drink out of my hand. So
wow,
I've got my water bottle, and then I'll pour it into my hand for the dog. And that's quite useful. We were saying, funnily enough, the other day, my chum and I, we'd been doing that with our dogs, and we were just saying, well, it's quite useful because allegedly you always have your hands with you. So you don't, because otherwise you end up with so much kit. How you would do that, if I'm honest, is if you had a bottle with a spout on, you can sometimes, the dogs will sort of drink from the spout, as you rightly said, or...
That's a neat trick, though, training them to do that.
Well, it's just useful. It's one of those things, over the years, you think, oh, you know, more kit. But I have water myself because getting older, I get dehydrated. I talk a lot. I think that's what it is. I get dehydrated. So
wouldn't have thought so.
No, odd, really. But there you go. And but I was, the girls were drinking from the bottle itself, and then I thought, well, I let it drip, and you do it slowly, and you can do it at home with their water bowl. You put your hand in, and then just bring your hand up gently, and then just get them to generally lap it off your hand. The trick is not to, when you're training your dog, don't just go flat out, you must drink this, this is what you must do. It is slowly, slowly catchy monkey with things like that, because they spook quite easily. You'd think, well, the dog knows it's water and knows how to drink, etc., etc. But when you're trying to do extra things, you can spook them. So, like, what, you know, going back to what you're saying with coats, we know what coats are. Dogs sort of might know that there's a weight, you can have a weight on top of them if they've had a towel on them, and then you go and put a coat on them and they go mental.
Well, it's not quite really the thing, is it? I mean, as far as I can see, I mean, I've got a lab who's, they've got a double coat anyway, so I would doubt that any rain actually passes through and gets anywhere near the skin. The other one, of course, is, a bit of a mixture of a boxer and very, much, much thinner coat. And the inclination is possibly to put a coat on him, but he doesn't care. He'll be out there in the rain and he really doesn't care. He'll just stand there and have a shake and he's, I'm fine. So I'm just thinking it may well be a human trait to actually try and stick coats on dogs that they don't actually need.
I think it is. And I think some breeds need. So our Lurcher and our, over the years when we've had sort of dogs that get cold quickly, we've done that. But generally speaking, I do think it's a human trait. I do think also it stems a bit from guilt, because perhaps we're not doing all the things that we should do with our dogs when we get a dog, because we get time poor with our dogs. So it's a bit of a guilty thing going down the road of going into a pet shop and buying them things, because we feel guilty that we haven't afforded them the time that they need. And that can be anything from collars and leads to coats to treats to anything. I mean, there's lots of things you can buy for dogs to keep their brains moving.
I'm going to say that's the other thing we're talking about here, really, isn't it? Is keeping a dog's brain active, because, as I say, they don't think in the same way as we do. They don't need all of the accoutrements of life. All they want is a bit of love, a bit of a walk, and a nice clean bed to sleep in.
Well, that's it. And also, you know, with the dogs, if you've got an older dog or a sick dog or even a puppy or whatever, the main brain game for a dog is obviously sniffs when they're out and about, because they're taking in so much information from those sniffs.
But yeah.
Perhaps you can't go out as often as you wanted to because of the condition of the dog, or you know, whatever else you're doing. But so sniffing is great. Shaking again after sniffing again is great, because it sort of settles the heart rate down. There's all sorts of reasons why they shake. But when you're at home and you think, well, let's see what else we can do, there's various things you can do. You can buy, obviously, these brain game toys, but then again, you're forking out quite a lot of money.
It's optimistic that they actually work.
Yes, or your dog. We've had them at class before now. We've borrowed them, and the dogs have just sat there and looked at us and looked at the game, and you end up doing it yourself and think, well, that was silly.
They're not silly, are they?
No.
I mean, how do you get a dog to sniff? Because not all dogs will do it naturally, will they? I mean, I've got to say, Nuka is a lab, and if we take her out, that's her one joy, is that she will go and sniff, and she will just walk very slowly around sniffing everything and go back to bits that have interested her. Whereas Archie's the other way around. He's not necessarily of that type, and he's beginning to sniff a lot more, but he's much more interested in running.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, a good game you can play with him is if you're both out, one of you can hold the dog and the other one can run and hide, and then give yourself a sort of a 10 seconds to get away.
Yeah.
But you need to hold one person needs to hold the dog, so you make it into a proper game.
Yeah.
And then the other person needs to literally hide behind something. You know, it can be quite in depth. You can really hide, but to start with, it's just an obvious hide with an arm sticking out or a leg or something, and then get the dog to run. And then if they've seen the other owner run away to start with, they remember that and they will run to find you. So that's quite a good running game. Obviously, you're using the brain.
But then, again, that does involve some sniffing, though, doesn't it? Because they will remember the smell.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, of course, dogs, as we know, have a much more powerful sense of smell than any human.
Yeah, and you can in the home, you can get them to sort of find their favourite toys. You focus on one particular toy and hide it obviously, sort of in plain sight to start with, and then you build up out of sight, then in another room. And you can just get them to sniff the toy before you go and then come back, and then they can sniff your hands if you've rubbed your hands on the toy.
Yeah.
And you could always put a little bit of extra something on there. There's various scents you can get out there, but you could put something extra on it if that was appropriate. But most dogs' toys smell manky anyway, so I think that would be fine.
Once they're used, of course.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it all sounds a little bit like the sort of training things that some of the drug dogs go through, only a much scaled back version of that, because they're taught to sniff, aren't they?
Yes, I mean, there's lots of things out there where you can do with scent work. What we have found, interestingly enough, that some of the people that have done scent work with their dogs, it sort of unlocked their ability more. And we were saying to somebody a while back, they were talking about scent work, and my philosophy is always do basic obedience before you do anything.
Oh yeah,
because that gives you the power to understand your dog, the tools to get your dog to do certain things, and then if you want to go on and do stuff. But we're seeing a trend now where people would much rather do fun and games, agility or scent work, rather than basic obedience. And I know jolly well why, is because basic obedience is bloody hard work. It's
not the language, but, it's kind of tough. It requires a little bit of persistence. But the thing with it is that most people don't seem to be aware of is just how rewarding it is at the end of it all when you've got it right and your dog actually understands you and can then take part in all the other bits in a much more relaxed manner.
Exactly. I mean, it is so rewarding. And if you're playing games with your dog, you can then build in your natural training. You can tell them to sit and stay. You can tell them to sit and wait. You can tell them to lie down. You can do all sorts of things, which then has a knock-on effect with if you want to rub the dog down when it's wet, you can just sit and stay or stand and stay and I'll rub you down. So I can see why people, because it's ongoing as well, and it's not that easy. It's not difficult, but it does, as you just said, it requires dedication. Whereas I think something like agility or scent work, you go for one evening a week or whenever, or one every now and again. You don't have to do homework because it's all there. You just run around and do that. But what we were saying to somebody the other week, that they were more interested in just doing scent work rather than obedience. And I said, well, if you're not going to train your dog and you do something like scent work, you're giving your dog a tool. And it's a tool that you haven't got control of. So I said, for instance, it's a bit like giving your child a Swiss Army knife for a birthday present and you going out for the day and you come back and you find all your double glazing windows have been removed because in the Swiss Army knife, they found the screwdriver and they took all the windows out. And you can't tell them off for that because you did give them the tool in the first place.
So yeah, there ought to be a manual to all of this, didn't there, really? and it ought to be, there's a thing in, we're not going to go too far into it at the moment, but there's lots of stuff in the news about dangerous dogs at the moment. And one segment of people who are adamant that all dogs should be muzzled. And that's the end result of not training your dogs. And people who have dogs being trained themselves in how to deal with their dogs. It's another story, and it's something that I think we should really come back to in a month's time, because I can tell you, Wendy, we've been talking for quite a little while now.
Oh, no.
It's time to go.
Good Lord. There we go.
It really is. So thank you for that, Wendy. And as I say, we'll continue that discussion, as I say, especially about the dangerous dogs and how dogs become dangerous in a month's time. But for now, Wendy Claxton, thank you.
Thank you, Tony.